Let's also talk about this. So many issues, so many things that used to be sort of the center of conversation in the city, in the nation, across the nation, are really not being talked about right now because of all the other issues in the world. That's understandable. But remember flavored cigarettes and the whole debate about flavored cigarettes and youth vaping and whether or not that was they should be banned. They should ban the flavored cigarettes and they should get rid of some of these, the pods that the kids were using that seem very geared toward young kids. And that sort of felt like it went away. And but yesterday at the city council meeting, it did come up. Alderman Matt O'Shea introduced an ordinance to try to crack down on them in the city. And let's ask him about it. Hey, Alderman O'Shea, how are you?
How are you?
I'm okay. So this is one of the issues that came up. I want to ask you about some others. So what happened yesterday?
Last month, I myself and 22 of my colleagues introduced an ordinance into the Chicago City Council banning the sale of flavored tobacco products in the city of Chicago. Yesterday, Chairman Rod Sawyer of the Committee on Health hosted a subject matter hearing that many of my colleagues and medical health experts participated in, where we had a lively discussion for a couple hours, the first of what I'm guessing will be a couple meetings discussing this.
Yeah, so one of the stories I read said it stalled, and that doesn't sound particularly good to me. So would you characterize it that way? Would you say it a different way?
No, I would completely disagree with that. This was a subject matter hearing. There was never going to be a vote on this topic. As you could imagine, Big Tobacco brought out its big guns to try to water this down and stop this. But there were many medical health experts, folks that have studied the terrible effects of tobacco use for 20, 30 years. It was a good discussion, and there's a lot of variables in this, but the fact of the matter, Anna, is when we talk about flavored tobacco products, when we talk about vaping, this is a very serious issue. 1 in 4 high school students in our country are using vaping products today.
Wait, say that again.
1 in 4 high school students are using a vaping product today across the country. 1 in 4. 80% of the youth who are using tobacco, they started with a flavored tobacco product, and flavored tobacco is targeting our kids. I'm not talking just high school. I'm talking 6th and 7th grade middle school, and they lure them, they hook them with flavors like Lucky Charms, Loopy Pebbles, Nilla Vapors, Sour Patch Gummy Worm, and once they hook these kids, they've got them for a lifetime of very serious pulmonary medical problems. And one staggering statistic, and Anna, these statistics, these are coming from the CDC, the Center for Disease Control, the Surgeon General, the New England Journal of Medicine has studies on this. You know, at the rate we're at now, 5.6 million American lives are in jeopardy because of the fact that children under the age of 18 who will die of a smoking-related illness based on this trajectory. 1 in every 13 Americans who are under the age of 18 today will be affected by this.
So take Big Tobacco out of it, and I understand the kind of money that comes with that sort of lobby group, but you're also heard from smaller vape shop type stuff, and they said, you know what, these flavors also appeal to adults, and don't put our business out of business. Why don't we enforce it more? Keep kids away from this sort of thing do it that way, handle it that way. What do you think about that?
Well, we've tried to do it, you know, long before I was serving in the city council with education. And we tried to do it most recently a few years ago. We introduced an ordinance banning the sale of tobacco products within 500 feet of schools and parks. And yet 1 in 4 high school students are using a vaping product today. Anna, 10 years ago, it was less than 1%. So what we've been trying to do, it's not working. And children are being targeted. We need to do something more. And this is more important than you know, just protecting business owners. We need to protect children. And that's why I think this is so important.
Yeah. You know, it is important. I wonder how is it banned in a lot of other places, a lot of other cities?
Well, like the state of Massachusetts has done a lot of work on this. The city of Oakland, California, has done a lot of work on this. Many other states and municipalities are looking at this. But I think it's time for Chicago to be a leader in this. We're going to see more of this across the country as these staggering statistics that continue to come out, just shocking people. You know, you just look here in Cook County. We spend hundreds of millions a year through our healthcare system treating tobacco-related illness. That is far more expensive than any other, you know, number you could throw at that.
Mm-hmm. Alderman O'Shea, can you hang on just for a second? We want to go to the Team Hochberg phone line here, and Ruby Johnson is on with us. Go ahead, Ruby, weigh in here, because I know you're an advocate, right, against...
Hi, Anna.
Hi. Tell us...
How are you?
I'm okay. You know, I know this. You're very passionate about this issue, and I wanted to hear from you again,
right,
because I feel like it's totally gone, you know, out of the conversation, and yet
right,
when I just heard Alderman Matt O'Shea tell us 1 in 4 high school students are still vaping, I don't... That surprises me. Maybe if I were the mother of a high school student and
right,
not a younger kid, it would not surprise me, but it does.
Right. I mean, it's scary. It's like you said, 1 in 4 high school students, it's 10% of middle schoolers, you know, it's creeping lower and lower in age, which is really scary. And, you know, and it's almost a form of currency for teenagers. You know, they trade them, which is, you know, arguably even more dangerous in the times that we're living in right now with, you know, in the middle of a pandemic, the fact that kids are still passing them around. And like the alderman said, you know, when the on-ramp for youth usage becomes wider than the off-ramp for, you know, adult smokers who are trying to quit traditional cigarettes, We need to do something more drastic than just saying, oh, well, we shouldn't have a vape shop within, you know, so many feet of a school. We just, it's, the flavors are, they were targeted to our kids, you know, and obviously we had this federal ban that you know, banned things like pod-based cigarettes and flavors other than, you know, tobacco or menthol. But the problem is that those were quickly replaced by disposables that the ban did not target. So our kids just moved to what they were able to get their hands on, and they're still using them. And those companies are still targeting our kids. During the pandemic, Puff Bar, which looks exactly like a Juul except it's disposable, was sending out marketing on their email list saying, are you tired of parental texts or do you have work from home stress? I mean, that's something that's clearly targeting our teenagers. So just because we're hearing more, you know, about COVID, rightfully so, doesn't mean this isn't a problem that's bigger than ever.
What is your personal connection to this? I mean, the personal story you have?
Right. So my daughter last year, our oldest of 7, she was 18 at the time. We were taking her to college, and she got really, really sick and was in the hospital for about a week with a severe lung illness brought on by vaping. So thankfully, she's made, you know, what we are believing is a near full recovery. However, you know, this kind of launched me into you know, advocating for change, just because once I started researching, you know, how these companies came about, how so many of them are on the market illegally, how they target our kids, and how prevalent it is, you know, among our kids. We've got 7 kids, and, you know, they range from 19 down to 6, and this isn't a problem that's going away. So, you know, we've been given, you know, the opportunity to use our voice. So I joined with Parents Against Vaping and you know, have advocated on a local, a state, and a federal level just to try to see the change that we so desperately need.
You know, I remember the conversations had on the show before about this very issue. And
right,
some of the people, were the pushback we heard the most was, mm-hmm, guess what? This is going to go black market. The second you say, okay, we're going to ban all of this, guess what? All the kids are still going to get it, just like they used to be able to get pot and get any kind of drug they want. And that's going to happen if you decide that it's no longer legal to sell them, and that the only people might hurt are the vape shops and the smaller guys. What do you think about that, Ruby?
Well, I do hear that argument a lot. However, I don't think you just sort of roll over and play dead when it comes to our kids' health. I don't think the fear that you might, you know, channel things in a different way means that you should just do nothing, because this is an epidemic and arguably, you know, one of the the biggest threats to our kids right now and their health. And if ever there was a time to fight for healthy lungs for our kids, it's now.
How's your daughter doing, and what has she become an advocate here too, as well as you?
You know, she's doing really well, and she did speak out for a while. Unfortunately, you know, I've got a little bit thicker skin as a woman in my 40s than she does as a teenager, and you know, it's something that is so prevalent, and so, you know, she's kind of gotten some kickback, and you know how it is. People on the internet can be real mean, so
I've heard.
She's kind of deferred to me to use my big mouth in this arena. So
so you're pushing forward, and this city council ban is the next move. What else are you doing in this area, Ruby?
Well, right now we're just trying to get, any parent who has a voice that they want to use to get involved. And it doesn't mean you have to go, you know, testify in front of Congress. It's simply reaching out to your schools to see, you know, what they're doing to educate your kids, to, you know, to hop on a parent webinar, to just arm yourself with the knowledge that you need within your family and to kind of keep the conversation open with kids. So, I mean, anyone who wants to get involved, you can send an email to info@parentsagainstvaping.org. And just because every parent has a voice to use, and it's more important now than ever.
Ruby, I keep coming back to this, but it is truly startling to me, the 1 in 4 high school students that are using a vaping product. You're far more in touch with this than I am. That's a real number. If you walked around a high school, you would say, yeah, you know, 1 in 4 would probably say, yes, I'm absolutely doing it. It's that big.
What's interesting is that the National Youth Tobacco Survey came out in November of 2019, and the figure is actually like 27.5% of high schoolers, so even just a little bit higher. But in casual conversations that have happened with high schoolers, most of them laugh at that number, saying it's higher than that. Mm-hmm. So,
treatment options, you have a website, or can you direct people for any kind of help or some guidance as a parent if you're interested in learning more about the cause, maybe joining you, helping you, or just figuring out what the options are for them if they have, you know, they're dealing with it in their family?
Right. I would just say you can send an email with the subject line Illinois or Chicago to info@parentsagainstvaping.org, and we can get you connected. We've got resources and ways to get involved.
Thank you, Ruby. It's good to hear from you. Thank you so much for
you too, Anna. Thank you.
Keep me posted. There's a lot going on in the city, as you probably have noticed. And I want to just kind of, since you're here, Alderman, I want to ask you, you know, what do you think is the most pressing issue for the city right now as you look at everything on the agenda? I know the budget is front and center, and there isn't great news there. There's a lot of holes to fill this year and next as you look forward. What can you tell us?
We have very difficult decisions ahead of us pertaining to our budget, but I think the most pressing thing right now is the unbelievable amount of violence we have seen in some of our communities the past several weeks, record numbers, and I feel like every weekend it's a competition to surpass the weekend before. Chicago police continue to get dozens and dozens of guns off the street per weekend, but we keep having these incidents of, mass shootings. You know, just last night in our neighboring Auburn-Gresham community, you had, a group fires into a crowd, 5 people shot. 10 minutes later, 4 blocks away, retaliatory gunfire, people shot. The unbelievable level of gun violence right now in our city is the most pressing. We have to try to get some of these bad people off the street.
That point is well taken, and I feel like we talked about this yesterday, and I'm hearing it again from the police superintendent, and some of the top brass have been doing interviews today, and they're honing in on this home monitoring system that they're saying is failing the police department. That the police department goes in, they find the guys with the gang members, they have some sort of record, they're caught with an illegal weapon, and they get the home monitoring system. There are 3,000 of them connected to the county jail. There are 1,000 of them connected to the county courts. And basically, no one's really watching them after they get out. And they directly point at them as some of the key suspects in the last 3 weekends of the most violent crimes in our city. That there seems to be this disconnect between the courts and what's happening with the home monitoring system. I get this whole idea about the jail and the risk of COVID might make some judges more lenient on that sort of thing. But when you see this sort of pattern, do you agree with the police superintendent when he makes these calls, and the mayor has mentioned it as well, about those calls to say, you know what, there's something about this home monitoring system that's failing us all, failing those communities, and putting these violent offenders back on the streets?
100%, I agree with the superintendent and the mayor. And, I mean, each and every week we continue to see young, innocent children out in front of their own homes. How many young children have to die? And where's the outrage?
Yeah.
We're almost desensitized to it as a city, and that is utterly frustrating. These families decimated by gun violence. Absolutely, we have a problem with the monitoring system. There are thousands of bad people, repeat gun offenders, out on the street today, and each and every weekend when we look at the numbers, somebody involved in these shootings has a very extensive criminal record that should not be out on the street. We need to figure out a way to get them off the street where they continue to go back and commit these violent crimes. More often than not, shooting innocent people, not the rival gang member. It's so disheartening.
It is. It's very disheartening. And I know I don't want to... The mayor also talks about, in the same conversation, about disinvestment in communities and the lack of access to good education and, you know, just the lack of hope in some in the communities that are also stricken with violence, the feeling of insecurity. There's access to healthy foods. There's so many things, mental health, and there's a family component. There are all kinds of things there that I know she also is trying to address, that city council is also looking at. To try to see how can we do better in those areas. But we've heard time and time again about bond reform, and we've heard about this home monitoring system, even pre-COVID, where people have pointed out that some of this isn't exactly what you had hoped. I think the plan with bond reform initially was, look, people should not just be in jail for stealing a candy bar or stealing something, and then because they can't afford the $100, the $500 to get out, that they sit there in jail, they're away from their families, they can't work, they lose everything. That kind of stuff I think most of us get, and most of us feel was the right way to go about bond reform. But what we're seeing in actuality, as we've seen, the Tribune has done extensive reporting on this, when they released the numbers, you actually drill down on it and you see that it's, you're not necessarily releasing just the people this whole idea was intended to. There's also people out there that go back and they terrorize communities, and they have these lists, these rap sheets in their past, and this, you know, this sort of feeling that's not working either. How do you feel about that part of it, the bond reform piece of it, Matt?
Well, most certainly a shoplifter should not be incarcerated with, you know, a no bond. Someone battling mental health issues should not be held with a high bond. But someone who commits a crime with a gun, someone who has a long, violent history of gun violence, they should not be receiving these low bonds, and they are being treated very similar to those other groupings. And yet here we are, you know, and obviously... The public health crisis with COVID is a strong contributing factor, but many of these people should be incarcerated. We need to get them off the street. They are going right back to their communities. You know, and in many cases, they are domestic terrorists. And again, who are the victims here?
Right.
Innocent children who had nothing to do with these conflicts. Families torn apart in communities all across our city. We have to do better. We need to try to figure out a way to bridge that gap and get communities and the Chicago Police Department to work together to rebuild trust. You know, people are afraid to come forward when they see a crime. People are afraid to, you know, communicate with the police. Certainly afraid to testify against you know, a violent criminal in their community. But we can't continue to set these records each and every week on you know, mass shootings and gun violence and the majority of the victims are innocent bystanders.
We're seeing that. It's heartbreaking. Alderman O'Shea, I know you've done a lot throughout all this for first responders across the city. Do you have anything going on now? Is there anything that, because I know you're constantly raising money to help those folks, and you've done a lot throughout. Anything going on you want to tell people about?
Recently we've been working with some of my colleagues on the west side and then some of our neighboring communities here on the south side that were disproportionately affected by the civil unrest. We hosted food drives, supply drives, collected monetary donations for charitable organizations helping to rebuild. And we'll continue to do that work, trying to assist those that are trying to recover from this. And, I just think everybody needs to work together. You know, just a few months ago, we were all rallying around each other, supporting our frontline medical workers and first responders who were, while we were all staying home and saving lives, being safe, they were out there putting themselves in harm's way. And now here we are.
Yeah. And so many people in need. So there are, if you're inclined and you have an ability to, there are a lot of ways to help. And thanks for doing what you're doing there, too, Alderman. Alderman Matt O'Shea, thanks for calling in today.
Thanks, Anna. Be safe.